Welcome to GleeCast,
the twice monthly
home of
movies about Glee or dancing or singing or something. It's just stuff we want to watch. Just go with it.
And casting. Here are your hosts, Emily and Erica.
Well, hello, Erica, and hello, world.
Hello. Welcome to season 5, episode 2 of GleeCast.
Indeed. We are rocking our new formats, if you will. Where we are instead gleeful about other musicals.
Hooray!
Yay! So today, the musical in question we are going to discuss is 2008's Repo! Exclamation point, the genetic opera.
Yep, directed by one Darren Lynn Bousman.
Mm-hmm.
Or Bousman, how does he say it?
I always assumed it was Bousman, but I kind of like Bousman.
I like Bousman.
It kind of makes it sound like he has the voice that I assigned to Brandon's cat, Angelique, which is like, oh, I am French. Like this kind of busty Frenchman. So I hope they're an embossment. That works for me.
All right, then.
Yeah. First of all, I love any movie that has an exclamation point in its title.
Yeah, you have to. It's mandatory, right?
And
they're giving you, like, emphasis. Yeah.
They are saying we are here and we are loud, and this is a loud movie, among other things. And this, if any movie required an exclamation point in its title, I think it is this one.
They kind of need all the help they could get.
It's not even that. It's also that there is nothing subtle about this movie.
No.
This movie is kind of the equivalent of a Casio keyboard banging itself over your head. I don't necessarily mean that in a bad way, because I quite like this movie. I quite enjoy this movie. I understand anybody who says, oh God, I hate Repo.
Yeah.
I understand it. But I also immediately jump to its defense to say, okay, just tell me why. Do you think it's a bad movie, or do you just hate it because it's a very style? It's a very, the style demands a love-hate thing. I'm okay with somebody hating this movie, but I do get upset when somebody's just like, oh, that movie sucks. Because there's a lot about this movie that is really impressive.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you. We've both seen this a few times.
We have a long and sordid history with it.
Indeed we do. Should we start there?
I think we should. Well, I'm gonna start here. I have a funny story to share. Obviously, I decide, okay, I have to rewatch this movie before we review it, because I haven't seen it in a few years, and I want to take notes and be ready to discuss it.
We're professionals.
People. We are. When it comes to not Glee, we're professionals. So, obviously, everyone's familiar with the fact that my boyfriend's name is Michael. So, Michael's over, and it's a Friday night, and we're not doing anything because we both work on Saturday, and we're recording on a Sunday, so I'm like, okay, well, I need to watch this movie, and I don't have time to watch it tomorrow. Do you want to watch it with me? He's like, what is it? I'm like, Repo! The Genetic Opera. And I'm, like, briefly trying to describe what happens while I search for my copy of the DVD, because I have, like, half of my DVDs are packed up in a box, and half of them are still on the shelf, because I needed more shelf room, so I packed a bunch away, and I couldn't find it on the shelf, so I'm like, oh, it must be in the box. So I'm, like, as I'm, like, sorting
through... Look for an exclamation point.
Yeah. As I'm sorting through all the DVDs, I'm talking to him, and I'm like, oh, you know, it's in the near-distant future, people were dying, and they needed organ transplants, and blah, 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 and then I get to, you know, and the Repo Man is hired, and he comes and he repossesses your organs, and he's kind of giving me a funny look, and I'm like, I'm like, what? And he's kind of like, oh, I don't know. And he's like giving me a thumbs down, and I'm like, no, like, it's like, I don't know how to describe it to you. Like, it's really, it's bad, but it's not, it's enjoyable. And he's giving me such a weird look. And I finally, I'm like, oh, here's the DVD. And I find the DVD and I hand it to him, and he looks at it, and he, like, flips it over and reads the back and starts cracking up. And I'm like, what? And he's like, I thought you meant, like, organs. And he's, like, playing the piano. And I was like, what? I was like, why would they repossess people's pianos when they're dying? And he was like, I don't know. He just wasn't listening to me. And I was like, oh, my God. So
I am just picturing this entire movie now. Whenever there's a repossession scene, it's like Anthony Stewart Head, like, with a big crew behind him in a truck, and, like, they're about to, like, it looks like they're gonna kill the guy, but really they're like, all right, move out of the way, we need to get the forklift in here to get that organ out.
we're taking that organ with us when we go.
Oh man, that's amazing.
It was hilarious. I was dying. I was, like, on the floor crying. Why would they repossess their musical
Oh,
instruments?
best use of homonym, homophone, wait, when it was spelled this, I can't remember what the term is, but that's amazing.
I think it's a homophone.
It might be. Did Mike like it?
I didn't really get to ask him. He chuckled at a few parts, but at the end, and we'll talk about it later, but at the end I could see him being like, oh, like enough already. Let's go. He just wanted to go home.
In general, where does he stand on musicals?
I don't think he enjoys them quite as much as I do.
Sure. Okay.
I was like, blah, 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 Giles is in it. And he was just kind of like, but it's a musical. And I was like, but Giles can sing.
Giles sings really well. Yeah, I also watched it with my significant other. And I had to explain it to him, and now Brandon likes musicals, but I had to, like, it's the kind of movie I always have to give a disclaimer to when I recommend it.
Yeah, you feel like you have to qualify it.
Right. So I was like, okay, I'm like, well, you know, it's like a low budget sort of goth rock opera, and I just see him, like, his face kind of gets very stiff. I'm like, but it's not really goth. I'm like, it's more horror than goth. And then I forgot at the very end, this isn't a spoiler alert, in, like, the last song when the Grave Robber is, like, closing things up, he, like, introduces it with, like, goth opera. And it just laughs at that point. I'm like, okay, well, kind of into goth opera.
All right, so let's backtrack. Well, let's
okay,
first...
Okay, do you want me to give a quick synopsis?
Yeah, we'll give a synopsis. But let's first say that I think for the most part, whenever we discuss a movie, we will have a spoiler-filled discussion, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so for people who...
I mean, how much can you really spoil in a musical? So.
And exactly, because most musicals really are more about the songs and the whole package versus the plot.
Right.
The majority of musicals, you can kind of predict everything that happens just because there's too many other things going on. Like, you know, if we're doing, let's say, Jesus Christ Superstar, we know Jesus dies, people. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, I haven't seen that. Jeez.
Well, that's going to be my recommendation for next time. Spoiler alert to the end of the episode. With Repo, it's similar. I feel like you can kind of predict certain things about it when you're watching it. And it's much less about plot than it is just about style and all the batshit stuff that goes on.
Right, so adjusting to the new format going forward, if you haven't seen a movie and you want to see it, watch it first, then listen to us.
Yes, and I think we're both going to recommend, to start off, let's both just say, I think we recommend this for people who appreciate musicals and maybe appreciate really strange movies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Disclaimer.
Disclaimer, yes. All right, so... All right, I hammered out a quick synopsis that doesn't really spoil anything, but just so you can still listen right now and then you can stop. In the not-too-distant future, human organs fail at a much more common rate, giving rise to the evil corporation GeneCo, which offers financing plans for organ operations, not real organs, but usually results in bloody organ repossession somewhere down the line. Running GeneCo is Rotti Largo, played by Paul Sorvino, a dying and bitter man who is looking for a new heir as his spoiled and violent children are unworthy of his fortune. Rotti seeks out the 17-year-old Shiloh, played by Alex Vega from the Spy Kids movies, the daughter of the woman who spurned Roddy way back when, for Nathan, played by Anthony Stewart Head, a former doctor turned murderous repo man after he accidentally thinks he killed his wife. Cursed with a fatal blood disease, Shiloh is confined to her bedroom, forced to watch the exciting city life from her window. But Shiloh yearns for more, and Rotti still requires vengeance for his heartbreak. Bum, bum, bum! Also, there is a drug called Zydrate that comes in a little glass vial. Zydrate? I can't. It's morning. Can't
yeah, speak. You also called Alexa Vega Alex Vega, but I let that go.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure her friends call her Alex for short.
Alexa right? Vega.
Alexa that's why, Vega.
That's why her name is so fun, because it's AA.
It is. It's like Yolanda Vega.
Yeah.
All right. So we have a pretty interesting cast. Definitely a very odd assortment of people you would not expect to find in a movie together in 2008.
Right.
You have Paul Sorvino, who most people would recognize from, you know, Goodfellas. And he's always Italian.
Mm-hmm.
He apparently was also a trained opera singer, and he
Who
gets
knew?
To show that off in this movie quite a bit. He actually has a pretty incredible voice. Anthony Stewart Head, who Buffy fans will of course know as Giles.
Mm-hmm.
Women who liked watching soap operas might remember him as the guy in the Maxwell House coffee commercials in the early 90s. Bill Moseley, who horror fans would recognize from like every horror movie in the last 10 years.
Yeah, especially every Rob Zombie horror movie.
Every Rob Zombie horror movie, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, a whole lot of things. You've got Ogre from the band Skinny Puppy, yep, playing another one of the children of Ruddy. Also playing, well, let's save her for last. We've got Sarah Brightman, who most people would recognize as the original Christine slash former Mrs. Andrew Lloyd Webber, opera singer, and now kind of electro-pop opera. Her career took a weird turn. And in the role of the grave robber, you've got Terrence Zdenek. Do you know how to say his name?
I don't remember. But okay. He's also one of the writers, right?
Yes, he was one of the co-creators of the original show and the screenwriter. So he's kind of like your narrator in a way. And then last, but in no way least, you have Paris Hilton playing the role of Amber Sweet, one of Roti's children.
Quite possibly in the role of a lifetime.
The role of a lifetime. We watched it, and that was one of the first things Brandon said when we finished it. He was like, did Paris Hilton do her own singing? I'm like, yeah, everybody did. He was like, she was really good. I'm like, I know. I'm like, she was, and like, and it's because I mean, I don't care for Paris Hilton, but she is perfect in this movie.
Yeah, she was cast pitch perfect. Like, this is what she is.
Yeah, and apparently in the trivia section, they talk about, like, the casting process, and she auditioned. She came in for the audition. Darren Lynn Bousman did not want to cast her. He thought it would just be, like, cause, I mean, this was also 2008, so it's, like, shortly after, like, her and Nicole Richie had the reality show. Like, it's kind of when Paris Hilton was everywhere, but in, like, that really annoying way. Mm-hmm. And Darren Lynn Bousman did not really want to see her audition, and she auditioned, and he was like, wow, she was really good. Maybe I will cast her. And I think it worked out for them because she also apparently used a lot of her own clothing for some of the roles.
Yeah.
She was like, you know what, guys, your costume department's not, you don't have a lot. Just go to my closet. Let's keep going with this. Cause this movie, do you have any idea how much it cost? I can tell you it's amazing.
I do too. It was $8.5 million, right?
Yeah. This movie looks, to compare it, Rent, the movie version of Rent, cost $40 million.
Wow.
Yeah. Mamma Mia cost $52 million. Granted, a lot of that went to salaries, because Christine Baranski don't work cheap. Phantom of the Opera cost $70 million.
Well, I have it as a note, but now that you put in perspective, it's more so. They really made their budget work for them.
Again, that was one of the things Brian says, like, and it must have been really expensive. I'm like, no. It wasn't. I'm like, they got money to make it, because part of this movie's kind of sordid history was that it had a lot of distribution issues. It was produced by Lionsgate, which also did the Saw films, which Darren Lynn Bousman did 2 and 3 for. But for some reason, like, once the movie was done, Lionsgate was like, yeah, we can't really promote this. And so kind of a bunch of the filmmaking and cast would like go on and do like road shows across the country to kind of get interest in the movie. And you know, the movie didn't make money because it had no advertising, and it's really hard to have a movie make money if you don't have advertising for it. But $9 million, this movie cost $9 million. That is incredible, because this movie never betrays its budget.
Yeah, it doesn't at all. Looks really well for what it is. It has scope and
and musicals are not cheap, because you have to deal with like recording time and everything,
and ADR and lip syncing and blah blah blah.
And you know, that's something I didn't think of, but the lip syncing in this movie is actually really good. Like, from watching Glee and I feel like we've developed an eye for who can lip sync and who can't. Because that's what we've said about how, like, Kitty looks so weird lip syncing, because clearly she doesn't really understand how to do it yet.
Right. She can't act and lip sync at the same time.
Yeah. And there is an art to it. And, like, when this movie, like, it never bothered me. Like, it never felt so ADR'd and post-production at all.
Yeah.
No. So, I mean, again, there's a lot of positives about this movie, from a filmmaking standpoint. If you're someone that wants to make a, like, post-apocalyptic movie, but you know you're not gonna have the budget, this is a really good movie to watch for inspiration, because there's like certain things they do, like where there's a lot of scenes whenever you have extras where a lot of them are wearing masks, it was simply because they were reusing the same people over and over again. Like, you have, you know, a lot of characters just come in and die, just a nurse comes in and gets stabbed. Well, it's usually like the same nurse the entire movie. But you know, you never really notice it unless you're really looking, just because there's so much else going on. So it's really impressive how well this movie uses its budget. Darren Lynn Bousman, mostly known for, I guess, the Saw films. Mm-hmm. I was trying to see what else he did. Oh, Mother's Day. Did you see Mother's Day?
I didn't, no.
It was, I loved it. I thought it was shockingly good for what it was.
It was the remake, right? I followed that it was happening for a while, and then I feel like it fell off the face of the earth when it came out. It never got...
It had a lot of talk because it was being produced by Troma, and it had a really good cast. It had, Rebecca De Mornay, and then a lot... Oh, I think Alexa Vega is actually in one of them. And it was just a lot of different people that, you're kind of curious to see together. It was really good. I was really shocked at how... Because, the original is a terrible movie, and I've seen it many times. I know this. And this one, the way it kind of... it was a really big plot and a lot of characters. And again, a cheap, low-budget horror movie that is really worth watching if you like modern horror movies. Yeah. But anyway. So, that was kind of his other... And the last thing he did, actually, we'll talk about the end, because it was kind of a follow-up to this movie.
Okay. I don't even know what that is.
I'll just say it now. They never made a sequel to this movie, although clearly it was
meant to be.
It was meant to have one, but when your $9 million movie makes $300,000 in the theater, it's kind of hard to do a sequel. But they did sort of a follow-up, which is on Netflix Instant. I don't know if it still is, called The Devil's Carnival.
Oh.
It's a 50-minute sort of just, it's a carnival and there's weird things happening. And it's also a musical. It has a crazy cast. A lot of people from this, from Repo.
I remember hearing the name, but I never watched it.
I think they reviewed it on Night of Living Podcast. It also had Brianna Evigan from Step Up 2. She's the one with the really husky voice. The lead in Step Up 2 was in that. Mm-hmm. Your boyfriend, SPF.
SPF, isn't it?
SPF, Sean Patrick Flannery.
Sean Patrick Flannery? Oh, maybe I'll watch that later.
Jessica Lowndes from the new 90210 TV show.
Oh, exciting.
If that interests you. Alexa Vega and Terrence Zdenek. Oh, and Paul Sorvino playing the role of God.
Oh, okay.
Well, also Ogre and Bill Moseley. So everybody but Paris Hilton and Sarah Brightman, essentially.
Well, and Giles.
And Giles, yes. Giles has other things to do now.
He does. He's busy.
We watched
He's a busy man.
We watched Hush yesterday.
So good.
I know, it's so good. And what's great about that episode too is it's where Giles is really a ladies' man.
He is.
And it's just where it's finally they've acknowledged, Anthony Stewart Head is a hot British guy. We're just gonna let him
be a British guy. I just made it to season 4 of Angel, so Wesley is all dark and angry
now. Nice.
And
We just got up to Wesley on Angel.
Mm.
Which is really exciting. I'm a rogue demon hunter. Because the whole episode, it's the episode where, you need a new character. I don't want to spoil anything for those who haven't watched Angel. And so I asked Prime, because I told him, oh, it's somebody comes back. And he's like, is it Oz? And I'm like, how could it be Oz? Seth Green left for a movie career. Why would he come back to Angel?
Yeah.
I forgot how the whole episode... Because then I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, they must do it in the opening credits, but they don't. Do they actually hold that off till the next episode, mm-hmm. just so you can have the surprise halfway through the episode of that? It's Wesley!
Huzzah! I'm finding Repo really hard to talk about, are you? Just because we have such a long history with it. I'm like, I don't know what to say about
it. Okay, let's talk about our history with it.
All right. I don't remember how... Did I start this?
It first, or did you watch it first?
I don't know. I feel like... I can't remember now. I feel like I started the train. Did we watch it together?
I don't know. You got it for me for my birthday, I think.
Okay, so I think I started it. I think I watched it first, but I don't know how I came to watch it. I don't remember at all.
I don't know either, because I feel like most of, the podcasts we listened to wouldn't have talked about it.
Yeah, except for, how they hate it. Exactly. I remember Bill and Chris talking about how much they disliked it, but I think that was after I had already seen it.
Maybe. I don't know. Because I don't think I was, reading Fangoria at that point. I don't know how we would have heard about this. But somehow we did.
Either. We did, though. And I think I was you need to watch this.
And I'm like, okay. And I did.
Yeah, and we developed like a really deep, crazy love for it. I was watching it this time and I was like, oh man, why did I love this as much as I did? Like, I don't know. It was just like that time in your life. Because it had to be, I mean, it was 5 years ago. You're a very different person at 25 than you are at 30. It's pretty crazy.
It's a different decade. That's crazy.
But we had this really lovely evening where there were a lot of shadow casts for this film, much like the Buffy musical episode. And they were doing a shadow cast here on Long Island in Huntington. So good friend of the show, Lisa, came down and Emily came in and we went to the Melting Pot and we had a lot of cheese and a lot of chocolate.
We had fondue first. Do you remember what happened when we ordered the fondue? Because there were three of us. And the way they do it, it's like, for 1 to 2 people, like, what were the servings? There was some weird serving thing where the waiter kind of judged us.
Yeah, he totally judged us. As much as we did. And then we were like, fuck that guy. And we ordered another pot.
Like, we ordered dessert. We're like, dessert.
Yeah. But then after, like, we ordered one dessert and then he came back and we were like, yeah, we want another potted chocolate. Like, we ordered a second dessert.
That's right.
We definitely did. And then we drove over.
It was worth every calorie.
It was so good. We were also a little toasty.
Oh, that's true.
And then we drove over and we got to see a shadow cast of Repo the Genetic Opera. And Terrence was there, right?
Mm-hmm. Terrence Zinnick. Yeah. And was it the other co-creator, Darren Smith?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah, it was a team of two guys. It's confusing because the director has the same name as one of the other co-creators, which, I mean, that's just too much to handle. Terrence Zdunick and Darren Smith were the ones who created the stage show to begin with.
Yeah. They did a Q&A. There were lots of overweight goth girls dressed in two tiny corsets.
And tiny hats.
That always makes me think.
Overweight goth girls love the tiny hats.
Makes me think of Amy from NOTLP now. But yeah, it was a fun time. We definitely enjoyed ourselves. And then we watched the movie a lot more times after that.
We did. I have constantly had to, whenever I've recommended people, give the disclaimer of like, well, I mean, it's not really good, but watching it, sitting down and watching it this time from beginning to end and taking notes, there were a lot of positives and such that I found.
Right, well, do you want to talk about some of the negatives we found this time around? Because I found a few.
Okay, why don't you start with your
They're negatives. Essentially like my low notes.
Okay, go with your low notes.
Okay, so just the editing I found to be a really big issue. And I feel like I remember thinking this and discussing it when we first had this obsession with it. There's the whole, I mean, to give the listeners some background. Basically, it opens with Roddy and he sings a song about how, like, his kids are not worthy of inheriting his company and he doesn't know what to do, blah, blah, blah. And then you kind of get, and he gets in a limo and he's going somewhere. And then it cuts and you get a song of Shiloh visiting her mother's grave and she's not allowed outside, but she kind of winds up outside and grave robbers, like, causing trouble, and then she winds up back home, and you get a scene of Shiloh and Nathan, and you get the background of how she's stuck inside, and she's infected, and
by your genetics.
Yes, exactly. And you get that scene, and then all of a sudden they have like communicator watches, like Kim Possible, and she gets a
little hologram figures that like turn around. It's kind of Star Warsy.
Yeah. So she gets a message from Roddy Largo and he's like, you don't know me, but I have your cure. And then it cuts back to Roddy. He's like, meet me by your mother's grave. And then like it cuts to Roddy at the grave and you see it's like a mausoleum. So you see Shiloh in the mausoleum and Roddy's finishing his song that he started in the first scene. So like it's very.
There were a lot of like runs and, you know, like. Maybe he had to hold a lot of notes.
It just like feels disjointed. And my other low note is that there's a lot of repetitiveness. So you can tell that like that whole, like they must have had a cut of the film where it opens with Roddy and then he goes to Shiloh and then the stuff that happened before that actually happens after it. But they must have been like, well, this doesn't make sense. We don't know anything about Shiloh. We need to know about her before we can blah, blah, blah. And I think that hurt it. Like,
there are a lot of cut songs. Like, this movie actually apparently has the record for most songs composed for a film. And there's a lot of them that got cut out from the final product. So I wouldn't be surprised if the original cut probably ran at like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Cause the movie itself is what, like an hour 40? It's not very long for a musical.
Yeah, it's 97 minutes.
Okay. So even, yeah, less than that by 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It seems like there was a lot cut. And as a result, you get things like that. You get kind of some repetition and then some things that are missing. Like, I've always found that it still bothers me. This is a spoiler alert. You know, we know that in this, we find out very early on that, you know, Nathan thinks he killed his wife because he gave her what he thought was a cure for her disease and she died. But really, it was Roddy poisoned the cure to kill her for vengeance. Nathan never, and Shiloh never know that Roddy actually was the one that did that. Nathan dies still thinking he killed his wife. And on one hand, I don't know if that's just, well, it's an opera, it's still supposed to be tragic, so it doesn't matter. But it feels like that's a key plot point that's never revealed. So I always wondered if there was something, you know, there was a song somewhere along the line or there was something in there where Roachie is revealed to have done this.
Well, I don't think there is because the soundtrack has all the missing songs.
Oh, right. There's nothing on there.
Yeah, there's songs on the soundtrack that aren't in the movie.
Yeah.
I remember looking at the track listing and being like, oh yeah, this song and this song and this song, like when I was trying to refresh my memory on the movie. And then I watched the movie and I was like, wait. Those songs aren't in the movie. And then I was like, oh, right, they're not.
Yeah. The another thing to be said about this movie, it is an opera. And I think that's another reason why a lot of people hate it. It's not a musical. It's an opera. Every word is sung.
Yeah.
So even, you know, those little lines where it's like, I will see you tonight. It's not I'll see you tonight. It's I will see you tonight. Everything is sung in this movie, which... Again, if you're somebody who doesn't like musicals, generally that is something that will immediately make you angry.
Yeah. I think all the flashbacks, you get a lot of flashbacks of Nathan
done by
and
like
Marnie.
Comic book panel style.
Well, not even. That's another issue I have is that the whole opening is comic book style, which actually looks really good. And you know, it's an info dump and it's kind of a crutch, but again, works.
If you have an hour 40 movie with a $9 million budget, there's only that you have to find ways around it.
Right. It works for that. But then throughout the film, every time you meet a new character, it's like,
do, 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 do,
this person,
do, 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 do.
Yes. Yeah. This person's story, and you get like
a couple
of comic book panels, and then you get this like aged footage of Anthony Stewart Head with massive sideburns, and, like the younger
version.
That's
a high point
them.
For me.
And it's just that I feel like with the three adult characters, with Marnie, Nathan, and Roddy, I feel like they recorded like 2 minutes worth of footage, and then they just reused that footage for every flashback. And it's like, ah, I've seen this footage so many times. Like you could have put another song in and not done this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. And it just sometimes when they're
the
like,
time management is off.
Yes. And I don't think they should have used the I don't think they should have come back to the comic book panels for the people's stories, because that was a place that another song could have gone where they could have sang that and it would have made more sense to the story.
Yeah. Because other songs are fine for exposition. Like Shiloh singing about how she's infected. Like,
yeah,
it's like, okay, I get it. I totally understand what your thing is. You know, the introducing the three Roddy's three kids, you understand exactly what's so fucked up about them very quickly. Like, there were ways to tell those stories in song that, you know,
that they just didn't utilize.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, on the other hand, I think the comic book stuff might be more visually appealing to some people who don't need to hear everything sung. I agree. I think it would have been stronger if they did that through song.
Right.
I don't know how they did it in the stage show.
Yeah, I don't either.
It must have been different, obviously, because I doubt there was like somebody coming out with a big book and turning pages.
Look,
everybody done reading page one. I'm going to turn the page now.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. You're trying to appeal to people, but how many of those people that are like, oh, look at these comic book panels, are like, I'm going to sit down and watch a rock opera. Like it doesn't correlate to me.
And that is another thing that I really do like about the movie is the idea of, like, when you're making a movie, you're always thinking, okay, who is our audience? Are we going after 13-year-old boys? Are we going after, you know, 18 to 30-year-old women? Blah, blah, blah. with this movie, like, you just have to throw it all the wind and be like, we're going after goth kids that like musicals. Let's do it. Let's
yeah,
do it.
Yeah, that's it. That's all we got.
And I'm sure, you know, I don't know if there were ever any TV spots for it. There was a trailer, obviously, which I forgot to watch, because I remember when Sweeney Todd came out, the trailer, like, Sweeney Todd is also an opera. The trailer basically showed the, like, three times in the movie where someone talks. Like, that's how the trailer was, like, music in the background, and then Johnny Depp was like, is it your turn? And it's like, so people were buying tickets to a movie not knowing that they were sitting down for a musical and an opera.
Yeah.
You know, with Repo, you could have sold this movie to horror fans without necessarily tipping your hat that it's a musical. You know, you could have just done text to say, like, in the future, organ repossessions from the director of Saw 2.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure that also accounts for some of the people that hated the movie who might have been hoodwinked into seeing what they thought was a horror movie. And this is a horror movie.
Well, and it's a good idea for a horror movie. That's the other thing is like...
Oh, and it's been done. It came the very same for, was it Repo Men? Was it Repo Men with Jude Law?
Yeah.
You know, and like
Forrest Whitaker or someone?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the premise is totally right for
a
horror movie.
But that also, that wasn't done as a horror movie. That was done as, like, a thriller.
Right, sci-fi thriller kind of thing.
They still haven't done, like, a straight horror movie about organ repossession, musical instrument organ repossession.
No. That's the one we're all waiting for.
And I think that's something that the horror community would embrace and appreciate. And I guess that's why... That adds to why there's a lot of hate for this, because they tried to embrace it and didn't. What?
I mean, Turistas was kind of had that.
I didn't see that.
Oh, Turistas remains a movie that pisses me off for a movie that lost me due to a factual issue. Allow me to sidetrack to a movie called Turistas, which was like came out in the theaters. It was a Pretty People on Vacation, oh, shit goes down movie. Mm-hmm. Melissa George and Josh Duhamel were in it,
okay.
I believe. And basically, pretty people, they wake up and, like, all their stuff is gone. And they're like, what happened? And it turns out, spoiler alert, to the twist of the movie that comes in about 45 minutes, there is a ring of organ, black market organ transplant people that kidnaps, like, healthy people in Brazil, I think it was, and steals their organs and sends them to different places of the world for money. But they reveal this when they have, like, a girl on the cutting table. And there's a doctor who's like, okay, I'm going to start removing your organs. I'm going to start off with one of the most expensive organs that's going to get me a really good price, the spleen. Okay, people don't get spleen transplants.
No.
Your spleen doesn't do anything. If you get your spleen removed, it's just gone. They don't ever put another one in there. There is nobody out there who's dying because they have a bad spleen or because they need a new spleen. You just take it out and it's gone. You don't need it again. It's like the appendix. So that it's like at that point on, I'm like, dude, you're writing a movie. You couldn't just like look at like just ask a doctor and be like, so seriously, what's like the most sought after organ? No doctor would have said spleen. And well, so from that point on, I said, fuck this movie.
Did the girl have to live for the plot line?
Oh no, they took it out.
Oh, she died.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I don't even know they got to other organs. Like, but like from that point, I'm like, I have very little medical knowledge, but I know that the spleen doesn't do anything.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah.
That's frustrating.
Yeah. One thing I think that is not so much a low point, but I feel like doesn't quite come across as strongly as they want it to, is obviously you have the future where people are like organs have become a big thing because people's health is failing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also this other stuff about plastic surgery addiction and how people get like hooked on Xydrate, which comes in a little glass vial, which is sort of like a painkiller drug that people get hooked on before they get their plastic surgery. So, and there's like little things about how people are also doing just like, terminal plastic surgery.
And elective surgery.
Thank you. That's the word. and it feels like they're trying to make something out of that, but they never quite do.
Well, it does feel, I guess in the beginning they're saying that like these surgery, like these elective surgeries came out of the organ financing.
Right.
Because they were already financing organs, so not why not finance plastic surgery, which I think they already kind of do. Don't you have a payment plan when you're getting elective surgery like that? Like, don't companies set up payment plans for you?
Probably.
I'm sure they do. They just don't repossess the things. But, yeah, I think it was like a step of that, and then it gave Amber Sweet her story.
Mm-hmm, true.
Which is Paris Hilton, because we didn't say that yet. and her, you know, the thing that's wrong with her, why she's so awful and doesn't stand to inherit the company, is because, one, she changed her last name because she wanted a stage name, and mm-hmm. she wants the perfect face because she wants to sing and she has to look perfect to sing, and now she's addicted to street Xydrate and elective surgery, and her face falls off.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which is pretty crazy.
It is the best scene. It's one of my favorite scenes.
It is so good.
But I think that's basically where that came from. It's not the smoothest transition into that. They basically just tell you, like, oh, they're financing organ transplants, so now they're doing plastic surgery mm-hmm. for fashion, like, which is kind of already happening. It's not really that far-fetched.
Yeah. It seems like they meant that to be a bigger part of it, I guess.
I can see that.
And again, I don't know if it's just a matter of things being cut out or what, but it's just one of those, it's another one of those pieces that doesn't seem to quite fit fully with what they wanted to do, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was kind of shoehorned in to benefit something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is basically just his kids.
Yes, who are really my favorite part of the movie.
They are. They're the best part of the movie.
His three kids, it's, you know, it's Paris Hilton, Bill Moseley, who plays Luigi, who is just essentially crazy and violent and just keeps stabbing people and ripping his shirt open.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could just sum him up by every time he starts talking, he just rips his shirt off.
Like. Yeah, and he's having a good time. And Ogre, who, like, can actually sing, is sort of addicted to, like, collecting faces and being handsome. I love his whole persona, because his voice, he's behind a mask the entire movie, but he's so creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has this kind of Luigi voice.
And he sings in a high falsetto.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, every time he's on screen, I'm smiling and I'm happy.
Yeah. And they're, like, incredibly depraved.
Their
lyrics and their actions and they're awful.
I'm the smartest and the toughest. I will find a hole and fuck it.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
These are the lyrics you're dealing with, people, if you're going to watch this movie. So
why are you still listening to us? Why aren't you watching it? Let's go.
And again, I think if I had a low point, it could also potentially be the fact that I want more of that and less of Shiloh being, I'm 17! On one hand, you need it. You need the, like, kind of ingenue character. And they do make her a little more interesting than they had to.
Yeah.
She could have been much worse. But it's just such a shame that, like, Shiloh gets all these big solo numbers when really I just want to see Pavi, like, defacing people.
My other low note, and then we can sort of move on to our high notes, is just the ending, that whole, because the whole ending mm-hmm. takes place at the Shiloh's big thing. She wants to go to the genetic opera, which they never tell us why it's called the genetic opera. I'm not really sure why it's called that.
So.
I guess. Oh, that makes sense, actually. But she
I blew your mind.
You did, a little bit. She wants to go to the opera, so she gets to the opera, and then the entire final act takes place on stage at the opera, which it's to a degree, it's very meta, like, we're the audience and we're watching the opera, but we're watching the audience watch the opera and blah, 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 which is great, but it just takes so long to resolve.
And it's also, because I think the idea of it's right, it's that it is, you know, you're watching an opera and this is the big finale of the opera where all the melodrama happens.
At the opera.
At the opera tonight. But the problem is it's staged in a way where it's just, it's not on this grand operatic stage. It's on a stage, and the audience is right there.
A teeny, tiny little stage.
And, I think that's a case where, like, they couldn't quite make their budget do anything bigger than what they had.
Yeah.
And apparently the whole movie was filmed on, like, one soundstage, which, again, is really impressive when you think how different every location looks.
That's really the only part of the movie that feels small.
Yes.
The rest
yes.
of the movie feels really big. I mean, even their house, even the Wallace house feels like really big because he has this whole secret lair. Right. Even though you only see three spaces, you see like her bedroom and the hallway leading to it. You see his secret lair that's behind the fireplace, and you see the foyer.
Yeah,
like, and that's it. But you feel like it's a big, massive house. And yeah, they just, I don't know what happened, but they didn't pull it off for the opera. Like,
Do not.
It doesn't feel, it feels like really small and really claustrophobic. And it just takes so long to resolve because they slow it down with Sarah Brightman's big aria. And it's just like, oh, this is taking forever.
Although it does end pretty cool.
It ends awesome. But
like, if you're going to end an aria, you should end an aria, not, not Pretty Little Liars aria, although you could end Pretty Little Liars aria by having her nail her eyes
poke
up.
Poke out her eyes. And that's such a great ending, but I just feel it, like, I hate that, we didn't even talk about her story, but I just hate that song, like, because it's the, like, a true opera song, and it's boring to me, and I just can't wait for it to be over, and it slows down the whole resolution of the film.
And very, what's the word? Very distinctly, because you do have, as much as this, you know, it's an opera, it's a musical, it's everything is being sung, there's melodrama. You do get to this point where all of a sudden it's like, okay, we know there's shit going down, but we're going to stop everything.
Yeah.
Sarah Brightman's got to
sing. Sarah Brightman's going to sing.
And it is. It's probably about like 2.5-3 minutes of her just blah, 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 singing in
a different
Italian
language. Yeah.
You have no idea what you're singing about. It looks pretty. Again, it's small for an opera. It would be a bigger stage if you were doing real opera. But it is. It just kills everything. I mean, I'm okay with it because I don't mind opera, but watching it, I remember being like, okay, now the movie might have lost, like, horror fans who were buying it up to this point, because now they're like, holy fuck, this is an opera.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It slows down all forward motion.
Mm, yes.
And then you finally start moving forward again. You get all three main characters on the stage with a dead body in the background, her dead body in the background. And it just stops again. Like, people are just being hit over the head and falling and passing out, and then they're waking up and then they're passing out again. It's like, oh my God, just end. Like, someone tell her what the problem is and let's move on.
Right, because it's still like, it still takes a really long time to explain, like, okay, so you weren't really sick. He killed your mother, although he really didn't, but we're just not going to get into that right now. And you kill him, you get the business.
Because I'm dying too.
Yeah, so there's just a lot. The resolution is muddy.
Yeah.
And yeah, could definitely have, it's still entertaining, and I think part of it is just because you have Luigi and Pavi on stage.
And not so Amber, fun. So that's weird too. Yeah.
Yeah, but it is just, as a finale, it's just a little, you're like, what's going on? And then even after that, when you have kind of the final resolution, you're still, I mean, and I think part of it was so much they were really hoping they could do a follow-up.
Yeah.
But it does kind of end on a confusing note.
It feels like a coda.
Right, because it ends with, like, spoiler alert, Amber Sweet takes control of the company. But you're like, but wait, why? Because he didn't leave it to anyone. Or did he leave it to his kids? I don't know. Yeah.
I think it's the fact that, like, it wasn't left to anyone, so it's up for grabs and she just takes it.
Right. Yeah, I think so.
But
I do love, it's the song that, like, I'm always surprised when I realize, like, how touching the song is, which is when Nathan is dying, the I Didn't Know I Loved You So Much.
Yeah, it is
when
a good song.
When he's singing with Alexa, like, it's just, it's a really sweet song. Like, the sentiment is, like, just, you know, I didn't realize how much I loved you until you're dying. Like, and he's dying. And it's a really, like, nice moment.
And the resolution is kind of misleading, too, because up until this point, you're experiencing Shiloh's story. Like, as much as the other characters play into her story, she's your touchstone, she's your main character, you're with her the whole movie, and then she walks out of the opera and all the codas, you get no information on her. The last thing we know is her father just died, she's an orphan, she's 17, and that's it. Like, like, you don't know,
she's 17,
you don't know anything else about her at that point, but you get resolution on your three characters that had like a total of 8 minutes of screen time. The Largo kids, like, it's strange.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the idea is just that, like, she's left now to,
she's,
you know,
free,
live her own life. She's free, but what does that actually mean? Like, you're living in a post-apocalyptic world. If you're free,
you've never
does she get a job at, like,
you've never worked.
I don't know.
She's never worked a day in her life because she can't leave the house. She's never gone to school.
Math. I don't know. Yeah, there are a lot of questions you're left with regarding her face.
For such an important character, they're giving her to you as your main character, and then they're like, we don't really care what happened to her.
I know, whatever. Jinko's going to keep going. That's all that really matters.
All right, but as much as we just dissected all the negatives and low points, there are high notes.
No, totally.
There are absolutely high notes. I was going to say there's a Joan Jett cameo.
There is, and it's awesome.
I don't know how they pulled that off, but they did.
I'm sure she, like, I don't know who knew her, if it was, like, Ogre or Skinny Puppy was like, I'll put in a call or what, but she just shows up for, like, probably, what, like, 12 seconds, and it's pretty kick-ass.
Yep.
My other high notes. You keep going with your high notes.
I mean, the whole scene where Amber gets on stage to read and to sing, rather, and she loses her face.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
High note. Just the budget and how they made it work for them. It was a lot of stuff we already discussed. Alexa Vega, I think, is a really, like, is kind of a big deal in the film because you don't, I mean, she's a little girl from Spy Kids. You don't really expect her to, like, that is who she is, right? Yeah.
Yes.
You don't expect her to, like, come out and start singing and be really phenomenal, but she's a really good singer.
Yeah.
She has, like, a really nice rasp to her voice, and it's fun to listen to her sing. And there's just, like, little things, like, everything filmed in the Wallace house is shot with a really soft focus, and I don't know why, but it's mostly the stuff that's between.
Because it gives it's this sort of, like, futuristic, gothic style.
But it's only the scenes between Shiloh and Nathan.
Yes.
And it's so apparent that it feels like it feels like they have cheesecloth over the camera.
It's like they almost tried for, like, a sepia hue for them.
Yeah, and I don't know what that adds to the film, but it works well for Anthony Stewart Head.
It does. And I think a lot of it is just probably because they knew they were limited with budget and what they had, and the fact that it was filmed in one soundstage. It did mean that they got to play a lot with, when you're in the Jinko headquarters, it's very cold, it's very clean. When you're in the Wallace house, it's very sepia, and it's warm, but it's kind of like antique feeling. And then when you're outside, it's just like goth punk everywhere. Like, and then when you're at the opera, and like you have all the, it's very like Hunger Games-y, where you have, you know,
I was about to say that. Yeah.
And so they really did commit to figuring out how to make every location and every different part of the story look and feel like a different part of it. And I mean, the way they use their budget and how they managed to, like, look at it and evaluate and figure out what needed to be done to express that, I think, is really, really impressive. And that's why I always have to, it's why I end up defending this movie so much to people who are like, oh God, I hate it, it's so stupid. I'm like, yeah, but can you at least admit that they really made their budget work for them?
Yeah. I think that's like our MVP of the film is the budget. Like,
well, like just how they managed. I mean, this is $9 million. This movie looks like it was $90 million, I think. Like, I mean, it's a messy movie. The visuals are messy, but they really committed to, you know, just making it look bigger and making it look and creating this world. Because whenever you're working with a movie where you're doing a future movie or a post-apocalyptic movie, it's kind of the most important thing is, okay, I have to believe that this is where I am at this point and this is where these characters are. And I think they do it. I think they nail it.
Yep. To the point where you don't find it odd that there's a dead body in a frame on a wall.
Oh God. I
totally forgot about that.
I'm like, you promised me that, like, when I die, like, I'm going to be a mannequin in the house, right? Yeah. Or a hologram, whichever. Because, yeah, that's awesome.
No, I don't want to be a hologram. I want you to put my dead body in the wall behind a frame.
And then, like, I can borrow your outfit sometimes, I guess.
And then someone will come in and steal me and give my outfit to my daughter.
Yeah. That all seems to make sense. my other high points, we both do, I know, but I love the grave robber.
Oh, I know.
Terrence Dinnick is just, like, he's weirdly sexy in the part.
Yeah, but not when you see him in real life.
In real life, you're like, oh, right, this is why I'm not really, like, a goth guy kind of girl.
Yeah.
But he's just so, like, and you can tell, like, he, you know, he co-created the show, he played the role on stage, like, he knows exactly what the tone is, and he just, I feel like he's such a great part of it. And you could do this movie without that character.
Oh, absolutely. Because
he doesn't really add anything, no. But I love having him in there, and I think he really helps put the tone together of the movie in a way.
Yeah, which is fun, but serious, but yeah. Still like, kind of snarky at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I think all the I don't have a problem with anybody in the cast. No. I think everybody is having a good time and is, because the most, like, if I had to, like, give one word to the movie, it's like, commitment. Everybody in this movie was, like, 100% committed to, okay, I have to sing with my face falling off. All right, let's do it.
Yep.
Okay, I have to stab a woman and then turn to the camera and sing, I'm going to do it with my heart. Like, everything about this movie, everybody is trying as hard as they can, which, again, can grate on some people, I think, but I appreciate it, because I would rather this school of acting than the Kristen Stewart school of acting.
Oh, my God, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, imagine Kristen Stewart in this movie as Shiloh.
That'd be awful.
Like, yeah.
I'd want to kill myself.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, overall, I mean, is there anything else you want to talk about? I feel like...
The one other thing I have to add, because okay. It remains my favorite anecdote ever at a Q&A, is when we went to the Q&A and Darren Smith and Terrence Dinick were talking about when they, like, were offering Paul Sorvino the role and how, like, they went to his house, like, his estate. He has this, like, giant estate somewhere in L.A. And, like, Paul Sorvino basically, like, read the script and was like, yeah, I want to sing. Like, he just... And, like, they said, like, he just really wanted to do it because he never gets to sing, and he was a trained opera singer. And they said that, like he's apparently just, like, a larger-than-life kind of figure, and he, like, brought them to his study and was like, okay, just give me a few minutes, I'll be right back. And, like, he left, and they were sitting there, and, like, they turned and realized that Paul Sorvino in his study has a life-sized, like, brass bust of himself in a Roman toga.
Yep.
Like, standing as if he, with a Caesar crown on. And knowing that, every time I see Paul Sorvino now in any movie ever, that is all I can picture, and it makes me really happy.
You know, I had that picture of that in my head, and I didn't know why, and now I remember why, and it's because...
I just thought I had a weird fantasy about Paul Sorvino being a Greek god, a Roman god.
I just figured I saw him in a different movie where there was a bust of him as a Greek god, as a Roman god, and like...
Yes, that is your celebrity insider of the day. Paul Sorvino has a life-size bust of himself as a Roman senator.
Yes.
So overall, I recommend this movie. Is not an instant watch, but it is a Netflix disc.
It's a Netflix disc, but it's also if you have the Amazon Prime, it's It's a instant watch on there.
Okay, very good. And the DVD has a lot of special features. There's two commentary tracks and a couple of like making ofs and stuff. So it is a movie that I think is worth owning. It's a tough movie to say it's a blind buy, just because you might hate it.
Yeah.
You really might. But if you, so I guess the best thing to do is to watch it on Amazon free and then decide.
And then decide.
Cause it lends itself well, like most musicals, it lends itself well to rewatches just because,
The music's fun. We didn't really touch on the music, but it's fun. I mean, besides the it's a rock opera besides like the really serious opera parts. And there's two, and I despise both of them, but that's just me. It's the aria by Sarah Brightman. And then there's a song called Gold that Paul Sorvino does that I just make.
Which I love because it's Paul Sorvino singing opera.
I can't deal with it. It came on and I was like, oh, I forgot about the song. I hate
it. I like it. I like it a lot.
No, I don't. But that sucks. But it's fun to throw out. Like, we used to listen to the soundtrack all the time when I was...
Good road trip soundtrack.
I was driving. I just put it on and listened to it because it's just ridiculous and fun. And
yeah, I mean, some of it's, like, the lyrics in some cases are genuinely funny.
Yeah.
And in others, it's just, like, the song 17, it's really fun. It's the song that, you know, the girl sings with the hairbrush. Like, there's very different music throughout. And it's a lot of different styles going on, which I think, you know, again, makes it well worth it.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, then.
All right, folks. So that was Repo.
Episode 2.
Episode 2.
Woo. Look at us.
Indeed. We're just cruising, aren't we?
We are.
All right. Now, we did not talk about the future, but I did have an idea for next week.
Okay.
Which is because we've now done two newer movies.
Okay.
So I feel like we should go back a little bit. Right. I do. I don't want to step back too far. I'm thinking, let's step back to a movie that's on instant watch that I mentioned earlier, because you've never seen Jesus Christ Superstar.
I haven't.
No. It's also a rock opera.
Okay.
So just while we're in the rock opera zone, and then we can go more traditional maybe the next week. I don't know. We'll see.
All right.
But Jesus Christ Superstar, folks, the movie, not the, because the musical is on Netflix Instant. I believe one of the performances of the Broadway show is also streaming, so you can also watch that. But I am referring to the 1978 Superstar film. It is from 1973. Oh, really? No. The musical was 73. The movie was something. 73? Really? I don't know. Anyway. I'm referring to the movie that is streaming on Netflix. We will watch that and talk about it, and you can play along.
Are you sure it's streaming on Netflix?
It was yesterday. Is it not anymore?
The only one is the one that, the 1973 one.
The movie. Yeah.
That's the right one? You just said that's the musical.
Oh, no, because I thought I got confused. I was, because when I looked it up on Wikipedia, the musical, I thought that they meant the actual musical came out in 1973. No, there is also a Broadway. Hang on one second. Now I need to see this.
It's Ted Neeley, Carl Anderson, and Yvonne Elliman.
Yes, that is the movie. Okay, the other one was not streaming. There's also Jesus Christ Superstar : 2000, which was, I think, the either Broadway or British stage production from 2000. But I'm referring to 1973, the movie that's rated G, which is hilarious because it involves crucifixion.
I just added it to my queue and it gave me so many suggestions that I want to do now.
Such as?
The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. Is that actually a musical?
Oh, yes.
And I've never seen it. I know.
Oh my God. It's amazing. It's really, I only watched it for the first time last year. That's funny. It doesn't come up under my recommendations.
And The Pirates of Penzance?
Yes.
And, whoa, Company, because Raul Esparza, isn't it?
Esparza.
I saw him in Cabaret.
Oh, it's nice.
And Into the Woods, is that the, is that,
that is,
the
well,
stage version or the movie version?
Well, fun fact about Into the Woods, they are currently making a film version now with like Johnny Depp and Meryl Streep and Emily Blunt and a whole bunch of people. But that is the production of the Broadway show from 1990. Okay, I think the show premiered and then they did a Broadway, they filmed it a couple years later. That's one of my favorite musicals. I would be happy to watch that.
Well, you know what we could do? We could wait for the movie to come out and then
both. We could do both. Okay. Double episode.
Anyway, excitement.
So clearly, we've gotten our enthusiasm and our magic back for Gleecast 2.0.
Yeah, and you know what else we have to do, right? We have to do Hamlet 2.
Yes, we do.
So
yes,
that we can talk about Rock Me, Sexy Jesus.
All night long. Yes, that's on my workout CD, by the way. Not for my workout playlist. I was like, one day when I was running my half marathon, it came up and I'm like, because it starts off with this like dun 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 dun, dun, like where they're clapping, mm-hmm. and I couldn't figure out what it was, and then it starts, and I was like, yeah, and I'm running, and thinking like,
yeah,
fading song,
Rock Me, Sexy Jesus, it's so good. Anyway, all right,
so we'll be back with Jesus Christ Superstar. In the meantime, you can find us on Facebook.
Yep, go talk to us there about stuff.
And if you need to email us, gleecast@gmail.com.
Yep. Exactly.
Until then,
we'll catch you on the flip side. Testify.
Testify.
There we go. We got it.
Got it.
Testify. Bam. Everybody, everybody. Bye.